Bumper stickers tell us to think globally and act locally. Pittsburgh, like other cities, has a plan to do its part to curb global climate change. I'm Jennifer Schvetta-Jordan. Today on the Allegheny Front, we hear from people who are part of the city's climate initiative.
So even if you don't believe in the climate thing, there is definitely something to be said about believing in the health of a community.
That's part of our continuing reporting series, Climate Chronicles. And we get a ride from a kind of cab company known for pink mustaches on cars. It aims to help ease traffic. Plus, the latest shale news coming your way on the Allegheny Front. Please stay tuned. First in natural gas-related news, Royal Dutch Shell is weighing whether or not to build a multi-billion dollar petrochemical plant in Beaver County, Pennsylvania. As Marie Cusick of State Impact Pennsylvania reports, the company hosted a pair of public meetings to give an update on the project.
More than 1,000 people turned out for the meetings, which Shell hosted at a country club not far from the proposed site outside Monaca. Although Shell first announced its interest in Beaver County over 2 years ago, spokesman Dan Carlson says it may take another 1 or 2 years to finalize its decision.
We're not trying to be evasive. We really don't know. Some of this requires input from other parties. For example, the air permit. We would like to have an air permit before we would fund an investment like this.
The company did not give a formal presentation. Instead, about 30 staffers were on hand to answer questions one-on-one with the public. If built, the so-called ethane cracker plant would convert natural gas liquids into products used in the plastics industry. Marie Cusick, State Impact Pennsylvania.
State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration between public radio stations WITF in Harrisburg and WHYY in Philadelphia, covering the Commonwealth's energy economy.
How is shale drilling impacting Pennsylvania's forests? This week, the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources put out a nearly 270-page report to answer that question. Journalist Laura Legere has been reporting on this story as well as other fracking news making headlines this week. She joins me now on the Allegheny Front. Thanks for talking, Laura.
Sure, thanks for inviting me.
So the lead of your story about the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources report was shale gas drilling in Pennsylvania's state forests has been, and you quote the report, neither benign nor catastrophic. What were some examples of the changes forests have seen?
The lead is a good representation of the way that the DCNR tried to explain how this has been a balancing act for them. So a good example is they've calculated how many acres of forest were converted, essentially areas of forest that were forest and are now things like well pads or roads or pipelines. They found that about 1,500 acres of forest have been converted for shale drilling through 2012. But they also found that that number was less than they might have expected early on. And one of the reasons for that was because they purposely had companies place the infrastructure closer to roads that already existed or areas that were already developed. So it's interesting because this is a good thing in terms of there was less forest that was disturbed. But then there's a trade-off because if you're walking in the forest and you wanted to have a nice quiet stroll down a nice canopied road, now you'll be walking near compressor stations or gas wells.
Yeah, I noticed in the report it said, but maybe some people might like this because they might want the access roads that have been put in for, four-wheeling or that kind of motorized fun.
Yeah, exactly. They're very clear that the way that you read this report is very much contingent on the way you use the forest. So if you're a hiker, you might find that a few of the trails that you use have been disturbed by drilling. If you're a snowmobiler, you'll find that there are, I think, more than 100 miles of new snowmobile trails because now pipeline right-of-ways can be used for snowmobiling.
So part of what makes drilling in forests an important question now is that Governor Tom Corbett has proposed more drilling. Remind me of what he's proposing.
Sure. He hasn't exactly come out with the proposal yet, but the idea is that he's going to issue an executive order to allow more leasing under state parks and forests, but it would be only under the forests and parks. So the leases would only allow companies that could to drill if they could access the gas from an existing well pad on a state forest or from private lands adjacent to the parks or forests.
So back to the report, what has the reaction been from environmental groups?
You would think a 265-page report would answer a lot of questions, and it certainly does, but it also raises a lot of questions. A lot of the data underlying some of the conclusions isn't in the report. So, for example, there's been some discussion about a chapter called incidents, and that includes violations that come from the Department of Environmental Protection and things like traffic violations that DCNR notes, but it's categorized in a very broad way. So you can't really tell the difference between a violation that might have been for a spill or something that might have more of an environmental impact versus a violation for something like a missing sign. And so I think a lot of the groups are looking for more information on those kinds of details.
This monitoring will continue. I believe the state has something online set up to receive public observations.
Yeah, what they've put up is essentially a survey to allow you to respond to the report after you've read it. They want to know if people think it's credible. They want to know what their perception is of gas development on state forest land. They're asking in particular about the chapters and if people are satisfied with the information that was provided. And they're also looking for information on how people might like more information in the future. Should DCNR release these massive reports every few years? Is there a way to maybe make some of this data available more quickly online? They're looking for information about how best to give people access to this information.
Right, because it took a few years to get this report. I think Governor Corbett started putting a team together in 2011.
Right, I think they were authorized actually in late 2010, and now it's 2014. The report mostly only goes through 2012, so already we have a year of experience that isn't accounted for mostly in the report. So there has been a lot of discussion about ways to make this more available. Certainly the data that's in the report has been used by DCNR all the while, so there should be a way to let people know what it is as it's coming into them.
Also in shale news this week, a study was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences by about a dozen researchers from different institutions. It finds the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, drastically underestimates emissions from fracking. What do you know about that?
Well, this this study involved flying planes over gas wells as they were being drilled or different stages of extraction. And these studies have been done before in other parts of the country, and they're very interesting because they seem to find fairly consistently that the way that the EPA accounts for greenhouse gas emissions from well sites, it's tallying up each individual part and how much methane or carbon dioxide it's supposed to emit with some measuring involved. And these studies, they actually take planes or they otherwise measure these emissions, and they're comparing them to what the EPA says should be happening. And a lot of the time they're finding that the answers are very, very different. So this is what happened in this case. They were finding that while wells were being drilled, a lot more methane was being released than anyone thought would be the case. And they think it might be because the wells are being drilled through coal seams. And
wait a minute, coal seams?
Yeah, I think the idea was that because this was in southwestern Pennsylvania, a lot of the drilling actually goes through coal seams. And as they break through the coal, they are releasing the methane that's trapped in the coal. That's not the methane that they're prospecting for, but it's methane that they hit on the way down and methane that is released. So it's interesting because that's sort of a localized issue and maybe one that hadn't been very well accounted for in the inventories that the EPA keeps.
Well, thanks so much, Laura.
Sure. Thanks very much for having me.
I've been talking with Laura Legere. You can see her news stories around the state, including at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And you can follow her on Twitter @Laura Legere. That's LauraLegere. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. We'll have links to the studies we've discussed at AlleghenyFront.org.
Later on the Allegheny Front, could a new taxi service featuring cars with styling pink mustaches help reduce automobile emissions? Drivers with the new business think so.
Instead of congesting the area, it decongests because of the ability of one person to go around and pick people up and take them where they need to be, rather than everyone getting in their own vehicle.
Take a lift with us in just a few moments on the Allegheny Front.
The Allegheny Front is pleased to be a media sponsor for the Farm to Community Conference on Friday, May 2nd at the Doubletree Hotel in Greentree. Experts will discuss how to connect schools with local farms for fresh and nutritious food and how to provide access to fresh food in rural and urban communities. A variety of workshops are available. More information is at womenforahealthyenvironment.org.
Our Climate Chronicles reporting series continues this week. Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto announced that the city is making progress in its efforts to reduce its contributions to climate change. Though most people who live in Pittsburgh might not know it, the city has a climate action plan. It's designed to reduce the carbon footprints of local businesses, government, citizens, and universities. The Allegheny Front's Kara Holsapple has more.
Students are carefully scraping salad greens and other bits of food left on their plates into a bin.
Everything goes in there except for tea wrappers that have foil and plastic on them.
It's just after the lunch rush in the dining hall of Chatham University in Pittsburgh. The school's sustainability coordinator, Mary Whitney, is showing off their composting program.
All your food waste goes in the compost bin. So the paper, the napkins are compostable, the straws are compostable. Like, see, you can see the straws.
Believe it or not, composting helps reduce Pittsburgh's carbon footprint. It cuts down on landfill waste, which produces the greenhouse gases that contribute to climate change. Efforts like this are part of a bigger agenda. Several years ago, universities, businesses, local government, and others created the Pittsburgh Climate Action Plan. Chatham and 10 other universities are working together on carbon-busting goals.
So we are actually working together with Pennsylvania Resources Council to develop more venues for composting for the city.
Whitney says they're also trying to coordinate energy purchasing. Schools use a lot of lights, heat, and air conditioning. By working as a group, they hope to make a dent in the amount of renewable energy that is purchased in Pittsburgh. Energy from wind and solar create less greenhouse gases than energy from coal and natural gas. Lindsay Baxter is with the Pennsylvania Environmental Council, the group that helps move Pittsburgh's climate plan along. She says the goal is to reduce the city's greenhouse gas emissions 20% from 2003 levels by the year 2023. They started in 2006 by doing what's called a greenhouse gas inventory. It measured how much things like waste, transportation, and energy use contributed to greenhouse gas emissions. Then they got to work, trying to reduce those impacts. In 2010, they did another inventory to track their progress. It didn't look good. Pittsburgh's greenhouse gas emissions actually went up.
Really, what you find through doing a greenhouse gas inventory might surprise you in terms of impact.
It turns out Pittsburgh's buildings were using a lot of energy, contributing to greenhouse gas emissions. Electricity was the most significant factor because most of the city's power still comes from coal. As the city tries to push those numbers down from 2010, they're finding it as easy as changing a light bulb. At the City County Building in downtown Pittsburgh, they've changed hundreds of them just here on the first floor. This building is nearly 100 years old, and the huge saucer-shaped lighting fixtures hanging from the ceiling in the city controller's office look like they've been here just as long.
Those look like old fixtures,
but they're retrofitted with new light bulbs that are more energy efficient.
Afton Giles is the city's sustainability coordinator.
They have automation in terms of when they turn on and when they turn off.
Automation and energy efficient light bulbs have helped boost the building's Energy Star rating. It's just like the rating on your refrigerator or computer, something like a report card for appliances. Giles says this old building just got a grade of 89.
It's out of 100, so an 89 means that we have a high B. So we're getting towards that E range.
Light bulbs are considered low-hanging fruit in terms of lowering a city's climate footprint, but Giles says changing them and making other energy upgrades is also paying off in a more literal sense.
Anytime we don't have to pay for a light switch to be turned on is money that can stay in somebody's budget so we can use it to do some other things.
Giles says it's money that can fund anything from filling potholes to green roofs. Recently, Mayor Peduto gave an A to community groups for helping move the city towards its climate goals, with efforts to plant trees, boost biking, and improve recycling.
So even if you don't believe in the climate thing, there is definitely something to be said about believing in the health of a community and the beautification of a community and the livability of a community and of a place.
While many people still don't believe climate change is happening or don't want to talk about it or think about it, climate scientists agree it's impacting us now. Weather patterns are getting more extreme and dangerous, and places like Pennsylvania are big contributors to the problem. A study by the Union of Concerned Scientists finds Pennsylvania alone is the 22nd largest emitter of carbon dioxide in the world. But getting people to act can be difficult, largely because of the politics. Lindsay Baxter says when she asks businesses and community groups to work towards the city's climate goals, she doesn't have to use the term climate change if it's a turnoff.
If you have to sell it to somebody on energy savings or utility bill savings, it's all going towards the same goal.
Baxter hopes the actions that have been taken so far will make a difference in Pittsburgh's carbon-cutting goals this time around. Work on a new greenhouse gas inventory is planned in the coming year. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Kara Holsoppel.
I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. This is the Allegheny Front. We just heard about Pittsburgh's climate action plan. There's been a lot of positive buzz about the environmental future of Pittsburgh under Mayor Bill Peduto, who's about 4 months into the job. And he's promised a bike lane in the city by fall and says he wants to make the city's very old buildings, I'm in one of those now, the city-county building, he wants to make them more energy efficient. I'm outside the office of Grant Irvin, the person the mayor's put in charge of some of these issues.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
So we're here by your office, and I noticed that your logo has the unfortunate old light bulb that Edison invented.
Yeah, we're big fans of Thomas Edison, but we're working on that logo.
What are you going to put there instead?
We should do like a crowdsourcing logo competition.
So now we are down in, what do we call this space? It's not the lobby.
Yeah, so this is kind of the grand hall of the city-county building. Really an amazing space when you look at it.
There's this flyer just picked up that says the black and gold city goes green. And this is a city that, I would say is not super green historically. How do you change that?
I think we are historically green. I mean, that's part of our history.
Oh, stop. I grew up here.
Yeah, no. I think the general recognition is that we had major environmental challenges as a result of heavy industry. A lot of places suffer from that type of perception. And, the history that I like to think of in Pittsburgh is that Renaissance was recognizing that our future required that the environment and the economy are connected. And our economy cannot grow if our environment is polluted. And that's been it's both a generational and a continual challenge of that relationship between business and industry. But part of the mayor's initiative is really to look at how can you develop clean technologies, sustainable industries here in Pittsburgh, so our environmental success and our economic success are one and the same.
When you're in a new job, people have lots of ideas for you. But what's the wackiest sustainability idea you've had?
I wouldn't call it wacky. I would call it functional. But one of my colleagues was asking about the paper towel dispensers in the bathroom, which is definitely something that we can address and we should take a look at.
Any other highlights?
I'm in a position, while challenging because of the sheer volume and the excitement because of the mayor's vision and the agenda that he brings, everybody has a good idea. People are looking to help. both the, you know, the neighborhoods, the citizens, the universities, and they recognize that this is a great opportunity to both improve the efficiency of the operations of the city and make Pittsburgh a real, you know, a more livable place. We've been able to implement a lot of those suggestions that citizens have given us just in the first 100 days, really. The eco district concept, which is a project that we're working on with the Uptown Community Partners. It is essentially a bridge between Oakland and downtown. And the idea generated by the public was to develop the Eco District program, which is an internationally recognized planning technology that incorporates systems and land use and energy and food systems.
What is one thing we might see in an uptown through the Eco District's plan?
Uptown is one of the most sustainable sustainable communities in Pittsburgh from a greenhouse gas standpoint. So the residents of Uptown have the lowest emissions of any resident in the city of Pittsburgh.
Buses go through there.
The buses, but one of the things that we hope to see through the process is improved mobility options. And, you know, so that the ability to bike and walk, you know, safely through Uptown, through pedestrian enhancements and cycling enhancements, but also creating an opportunity to build on the residents' vision of Uptown as a destination. You know, so it's not a place necessarily that you go through, but it's a place that you go to.
Well, do you mind if we head upstairs back to your office to talk about some other things?
Sure, let's go.
The city got a grade of 18% from this organization, Clean Edge, on clean tech leadership. That was based on so-called clean electricity, carbon management, green buildings, and what they called advanced transportation. We were ranked, for example, behind Tampa, Florida in advanced transportation. How accurate do you think this assessment is?
With regards to Pittsburgh, we've made a lot of great advancements in recent years in areas of green building, energy retrofits, as well as the transportation sector. Carnegie Mellon, a close partner of ours, has been a real leader in the formation of the Traffic 21 initiative, which we're working closely on in terms of investigating different opportunities to deploy technologies, both develop and deploy technologies here in Pittsburgh. One really great example of that has been the traffic signal timing, where the signalization is being coordinated, improving flow and reducing emissions as a result of that flow coordination. So I think we really are poised to be a leader and to innovate.
And you have a new position here as sustainability director across city departments. So you'll be working on enhancing sustainability in the city's buildings and through internal policies, as well as in the wider community through coordination and infrastructure. You get to sidestep one of the most divisive sustainability issues, which is fracking for natural gas. But there are concerns in the city whether levels of radioactivity, radiation in the water would get to a point that would be worrisome. Will your office look at this issue at all?
One of the areas that we're addressing a lot of resources is looking at energy, water, and air quality. You know, Mayor Peduto has set some high standards with regards to our engagement, both internally in terms of our operations and how we look to reduce and improve our footprint, but also externally in looking at how we see the city as a whole and as a system and how we can improve sustainability in our neighborhoods. And that means really looking at our water systems, which is a key component of our sustainability agenda that we're developing, as well as air quality. So the idea of looking at different regulatory structures, the use of technology, and keeping abreast of and being a part of both regional and federal conversations around water and air quality, we look to take a leadership role there.
Recycling seems like such old hat to people, but I know I still constantly go to restaurants and coffee shops, and I've heard that people go to bars even, where bottles and cups aren't recycled. And I reported on this for the Allegheny Front probably a decade ago. And what will your office do about this and when?
You know, one of the things that the city has been really good at doing is residential pickup. So we just received a grant award from the Department of Environmental Protection that showcased the increase in tonnage that we receive.
How much was it?
We're around 59,000 tons, I think it is. So close to 60,000 tons of recyclable material that the citizens of Pittsburgh contribute. And that's grown, and which is definitely a good sign. And if you walk through streets and alleys on recycling pickup day, you see that is increasing. So we do a really good job on residential pickup, and I think there's some opportunities for growth there.
But the other area really is around, I think, commercial and business district recycling. It is part of the Pittsburgh Code, and they are required to recycle. So probably the best way is that we'll start to deploy that is through enhanced education and then enforcement as well.
Thanks for speaking with me.
Thanks a lot, Jennifer. Appreciate it.
I've been talking with Pittsburgh Sustainability Director Grant Irvin. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. You can find links to some of those studies I spoke about at AlleghenyFront.org. Asked a girl what she wanted to be. She said, baby, can't you see? You just heard a bit about using technology to streamline transportation and reduce emissions. Pennsylvania's Utility Commission chairman has expressed interest in legalizing a new type of cab service that could keep more cars off the road. The company called Lyft, L-Y-F-T, arrived recently in Pittsburgh. Riders reach Lyft drivers through a smartphone application. Drivers use their own personal cars, festooned with the company's pink mustaches. Lyft's gotten into hot water in multiple states because the drivers don't have true cabbie licenses. I took a ride recently from Casey Red Gaspari, a restaurant manager with a new side job.
So what were you doing when I just called?
I had just dropped someone else off. Your little whoop came up on my phone, was like, hey, this person needs a Lyft. I was just like, sure, let's go pick them up.
So you kind of log on and say when you're available?
So for me, what I do is I just open up the app, and it has the option to slide into driver mode. So when you do that, it'll just automatically kick you onto the system and let people that are trying to get rides know that you're available.
Some people are saying, oh, this is a good thing environmentally, because then people might not have to have cars to get everywhere they want to, or maybe you could walk to the grocery store but then get a Lyft back or something. Have you thought about that at all, or have people mentioned that?
If two or three of your friends, you know, you guys all meet somewhere, you can all take the same ride home, or, you know, it just, instead of congesting the area, it decongests because of the ability of one person to go around and pick people up and take them where they need to be, rather than everyone getting in their own vehicles or on buses or wherever and going from there. Now you're free, but if you check the app on your phone,
okay,
it goes through the app automatically. So like at the end of the Lyft,
it took my credit card off?
Right. So, oh. And you have 24 hours to pay for it.
Okay.
Or it will just take it out automatically. But what it does is, because it's a donation,
mm-hmm,
it's not technically a charge, you can adjust it up and down.
Let's see. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front. Kara Holsoppel is the production and digital editor. Kathy Naur is the executive producer. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. Hey, check out our Facebook page. Our new fun-to-view features include wildlife photos from Beechwood Farms Nature Reserve and comical commentaries from our intern, Justin Brown. They offer a different take on Allegheny Front stories. Join us again next time for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments. Our coverage of the Marcellus Shale is supported by the Roy A. Hunt Foundation, the Park Foundation, and the George and Miriam Martin Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports coverage of energy and conservation. The Pittsburgh Foundation supports Climate Chronicles, our series on climate change.